And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, March 10th. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can take down names and addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, any of the information that you need to take action. Let's start with announcements. The Alameda Creek Alliance is having a volunteer restoration day in Niles, California on March 19th. They write, join us on Saturday, March 19th from 10 a.m. to noon for a morning of habitat restoration along Alameda Creek. We'll continue clearing invasive plants, check on our recent plantings, and plant some more native grasses and rushes along Alameda Creek. This continues our past work with Alameda Creek Alliance volunteers, and your efforts will enhance habitat for fish and wildlife along Alameda Creek for years to come. Meet at 10 a.m. in the Niles Staging Area parking lot along Old Canyon Road near Canyon Oaks Court in the Niles area of Fremont. The address is approximately 720 Old Canyon Road, and they'll work until about noon. They advise you to please wear pants and sturdy closed-toe shoes that can get dirty. We provide gloves and tools. The work isn't on much of a slope, but the ground can be uneven. There is no poison oak in the immediate area where we'll be working. Expect cool weather and morning dew when we start. Heavy rain cancels the effort. All participants need to sign a waiver form, and you can go to the website for details, and anyone under 18 needs a parental signature. There is a required RSVP. Get details at the website, and that website is www.alamedacreek.org. And that's the Alameda Creek Volunteer Restoration, March 19th from 10 a.m. to noon. And the webpage again for details is www.alamedacreek.org. Appalachia Resists Social and Environmental Justice Action Camp is coming up March 18th through 20th. They're a small group of rural activists who use direct action as a tactic to resist fracking in industry in their region. They work and live in the rural working class community that is predominantly white, but they see that struggles for environmental justice and the ongoing fight for racial justice are linked. They had asked you to RSVP by March 7th, but give them a try. appalachia.resist@gmail.com. That's appalachia.resist@gmail.com. And you can find more information at the Earth First Newswire. That's www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And a call for support to stop a timber sale in the Malheur National Forest. In this request from the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, found on the Earth First Newswire. They need your comments by March 25th. Help us show public opposition to a proposed timber sale degradation of the Magone Lake area on the Malheur National Forest, which threatens creek water flowing for steelhead redband and West Slope cutthroat trout. It would eliminate suitable habitat for pileated and three-toed woodpeckers and martens, and would fragment the integrity of wildlife habitat in an inventoried roadless area and in other areas never logged or roaded before. In the plan, our alternative 4 would be marginally better than the others, with 3,570 acres of commercial logging for 9 million board feet of timber, a more acceptable 15.4 miles of new trail construction with 7.6 miles of that within an inventoried roadless area. Significantly, Alternative 4 would do no commercial logging or non-commercial thinning in the roadless area and less prescribed burning in the roadless area. Alternative 4 is also the only action alternative that avoids violating the forest plan standards for elk and deer summer range, winter range, and wildlife emphasis area satisfactory forest cover, which is needed to provide thermal protection and hiding security for elk and deer from hunters and other predators. There's an adequate range of alternatives offered to the public in the plan other than that the other changes specified above. The types of management proposed are virtually all the same except for scale, and there is no option offered that would not include commercial logging, more temporary road building, and extensive prescribed burning, even in pileated woodpecker and marten habitat, in an area already hit hard in the past by heavy commercial logging, roading, and livestock grazing. We are opposed to all logging, non-commercial thinning, prescribed burning, and extensive trail building, including mountain bike trails in the Nipple Butte roadless area, as roadless areas are the last large intact blocks of wildlife security habitat for far-ranging predators and scavengers such as marten, wolverine, gray wolf, Canada lynx, and Pacific fisher, who are also all vulnerable to the impacts of from human disturbance, trapping excess and or logging fragmentation, and removal of needed forest structure such as large snags and abundant down wood. Please send your comments on the forest logging to Blue Mountain Ranger District, care of Sasha Fertig, P.O. Box 909, John Day, Oregon, 97845. Once again, that's the Blue Mountain Ranger District, care of Sasha Fertig, P.O. Box 909, John Day, Oregon, 97845. You can also email comments to comments-pacific-northwest-malheur-blue-mountain@fs.fed.us. Once again, that email address, comments-pacific-northwest-malheur-blue-mountain@fs.fed.us. Only .doc, .docx, .rtf, and .pdf formats are accepted. You could also fax your comments to 541-575-3319. That's 514-575-3319. If you do make comments, please include your name, address, phone number, signature, and the title of the document, which should be MAGONE, Magone Project Draft Environmental Impact Statement. If you want to call the Forest Service, call Sasha Fertig, 541-575-3061. That's 541-575-3061. Thank you, and please consider volunteering with the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project to help us continue our forest protection work. The Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project will receive donations at 27803 Williams Lane, Fossil, Oregon, 97830. Once again, that's Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, 27803 Williams Lane, Fossil, Oregon, 97830, or you could call 541-385-9167. That's 541-385-9167. And you could also go to www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire to read that article. Elliott Rainforest Climbing Camp will take place April 19th through the 24th in Oregon. As found on the Earth First Newswire, do you ever dream of exploring the forest canopy, sleeping in trees, or dangling from bridges? Would you like to join Blockadia or create Blockadia in your hometown? Join us in the Elliott Rainforest on April 19th through the 24th for a week of intensive training and climbing in the backwoods of so-called Southwest Oregon. The Elliott Climb Camp will be on Coos Land near the Elliott State Forest in Reedsport, Oregon. The camp is open to beginners and seasoned climbers alike, although we'd like first-timers to commit to the whole week so we can give you all the skills you need to dangle with safety. Workshops include basic ascending and descending on a single rope, traverses, girthing and spurring, platform rigging, aerial pods, and haul systems. The week will start with the basics and builds, so even the newbiest of noobs can be a real not-nerd at the end of camp. We'll be bringing trainers in from all over the West Coast with extensive climbing in both professional and activist settings. Why here and why now? Our region is engaged in a critical struggle to stop the ever-spreading fingers of the fossil fuel industry by railroad, ship, and pipeline through our port cities and forests. The Umpqua, Coos, Coquille, Rogue, and Klamath watersheds are all threatened with a proposed Pacific Connector gas pipeline, which would pass right through the Elliott State Forest and export frack gas through the Coos Bay estuary. Meanwhile, the Elliott State Forest is threatened with the bleak prospect of privatization, which would leave this 93,000-acre temperate rainforest under the greedy care of timber barons. Prospective buyers will be touring the Elliott in May. We want you to know about this place and these fights, and really also, we just want to hang out in the woods with new and old friends, fall in love with trees, rivers, and people, and learn some kick-ass skills that will help us win. Here are the details. We're asking everyone to online register so that we can send you directions and make sure you have enough gear for everyone. That's they have enough gear for everyone. If you're welcome, you can use a nickname if you don't want to Google to everything you know about everybody. We're capping registration at 25 to 30 participants and prioritizing people who can commit to training with us for the whole week. We might also be able to take on more people if you are coming with substantial experience and can help with basic training. Please contact us in advance if this applies to you. We'll also have some basic policies about substance use, not likely. Liability waivers, be a good thing to have, which we'll update to you when we send you the directions. We'll have a communication with enough taters so that no one goes hungry, but we'd love it if you brought some food to share and snack on. Your kitties will be more than welcome at this event, with you there, of course, and we will be over 45 minutes from stores and hospitals, so plan accordingly. Dogs are fine as long as they can handle, without biting trainers, digging in the shitter, or terrorizing small children hanging out on the ground while you're 20 feet up in the air all day. We're holding this camp in the spring so that we can climb without interfering with nesting marbled murrelets, the coolest birds ever. The Elliott is a rainforest, so please come prepared to camp and climb in the rain. A rain jacket, rain pants, multiple pairs of wool socks, and a tent with a good rain fly are all recommended. We'll bring dry firewood and hella tarps, they say. You might bring some dry firewood, too. They're asking for a $30 to $100 donation per participant to help the trainers out and to buy food and equipment, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. For more information and to RSVP, email to ElliottClimbCamp2K16@gmail.com. That's ElliottClimbCamp2K16@gmail.com. Once again, ElliottClimbCamp2K16@gmail.com. If you need information or more specifics, go to www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And down in Australia, women have locked trees in New South Wales Laird's Forest on International Women's Day to save Aboriginal sacred site. In this story from the Frontline Action on Coal, as found in the Earth First Newswire, Malls Creek, Australia, the 8th of March, 2016. United with Gamaroi Women on International Women's Day, three women, Tosh Jones, Clarity Jen Hunt Greenwood, and Chelsea Lazar, have locked themselves to habitat trees within the critically endangered Laird State Forest in near northwest New South Wales. While Gamaroi women gather on Laird Forest Road to show support and solidarity for today's action, Gamaroi elders are requesting Greg Hunt grant protection under the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Protection Act for Lawler's Well, the last remaining sacred site scheduled for destruction by Whitehaven Coal. As Greg Hunt's first cousin, I am deeply ashamed by his neglect of the Gamaroi, the elders, and this sacred site, and I am calling for him to permanently protect Lawler's Well now, said Clarity Greenwood, also known as Jen Hunt, a social worker. 2 years ago, Gamaroi traditional custodians made an urgent application for Environment Minister Greg Hunt to use his powers under Section 9 and 10 of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Protection Act to stop work in the area following the destruction and desecration of 37 culturally significant sites. Minister Greg Hunt has refused to grant the urgent application, stating that Whitehaven is not scheduled to clear Lawler's Well until 2017 and therefore he doesn't need to make an immediate decision. It's hard to see the destruction of our country. The elders have been waiting too long for answers. It is completely unacceptable that Hunt is dragging his feet on the protection of Lawler's Well. We're asking Greg Hunt to commence an independent report, including oral evidence, to make an informed decision. We are asking him to do his job right and protect Lawler's Well, said Dolly Talbot, Gamaroi traditional custodian spokesperson. These actions are part of an ongoing campaign in which over 380 people have been arrested. Earlier this week saw a historic moment when the Gamaroi Gamilaroi men locked onto concrete barrels on a haul road to physically stop the theft of their land. And you can find more information at www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And news from Chile, six San Aruco forestry trucks have been torched and the route blockaded. In this story by País Mapuche, which in Spanish means the country of the Mapuche Indians, as found on Matiendo Ruido, Earth First Newswire. Sabotage was reported on Wednesday morning against a caravan of trucks that lend their services to Forestal Arauco, the forestry service of the Arauco Forest, home to 1,000-year-old trees and countless other beings on Route P-150 in the Tarua Commune. This corresponds to the new wave of resistance against forestry companies investing in the zone. This occurred at the cross of La Campaña de Tarua, where an unknown group of Huaychaf Mapuche blocked the caravan's path, blocking 15 trucks belonging to corporations Transvia and Transtelco. They made the drivers get down out of the vehicles before proceeding to burn the 6 machines. This action generated a big stir within Chilean political class, as much of the opposition as with the forestry officials, and received criticism from the forestry corporations and the Foresters Guild, since their work there is backed by police in the El Retiro installations. They also received support as trucks are escorted in and out of the sector by staff from GOPE of Carabineros, a branch of the Chilean police, through armored cars, recently placed there by the government to protect the forestry's investment in traditional Lac Flinch territory. During the action, there were no arrests, but there was one wound. A woman of approximately 20 years of age, wife to one of the drivers, was shot in her body, apparently when she refused to get down from the vehicle. She was transferred to the Caranalahue Hospital, where her wounds went from being considered severe to minor throughout the afternoon. After the attack on the caravan at El Retiro, the Route P-70 was blocked, that route that connects to Cañete. It began with logs from a recent cut, some of which were intentionally placed on the road aimed to impede the arrival of a contingent of the GOPE from Cañete. As far as the work at El Retiro, this was paralyzed, according to Ivan Chamorro, manager of public affairs at Arauco, as stated on Rio Biobio. According to the government's Sareme in the Biobío region, Enrique Instroza, a state of emergency was declared and transmitted by Radio Biobío. We would like to condemn the attack, which appears to us to be of maximum gravity. So for that reason, instructions have been given to the regional mayor, Diaz, in the judicial team so that the state of emergency may be declared, signaled Instroza. The last time a state of emergency was declared was for the attempt against Fundo San Guillermo last year, which resulted in community members' incarceration, two of whom are still in the preventative prison of Les Boues. This information came from the Earth First Journal Newswire at www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And the West Side Project in Northern California threatens over 100 northern spotted owls, in this story by Steve Holmer of the American Bird Conservancy. 14 timber sales in the Klamath National Forest, approved by the USDA Forest Service late last month, have received permission from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to take up to 103 northern spotted owls, a subspecies already in steep decline. What the Environmental Protection Act TAKE means is to harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect any threatened or endangered species. This includes significant habitat modification and degradation that results in injury or death to listed species by significantly impairing behavioral patterns such as breeding, feeding, or sheltering. In this case, the take of 74 adult owls and 12 to 29 juveniles could result from the West Side Project by reducing the amount of nesting, roosting, or foraging habitat below recommended minimums, and the loss of young due to disturbance during the breeding season. The West Side Project, approved on February 29th, proposes extensive post-fire salvage logging, 70% of which is in forest reserves designated by the Northwest Forest Plan as areas for wildlife conservation and forest restoration. According to analysis by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, habitat will be removed from up to 57 areas where northern spotted owls are known to nest, said George Fenwick, president of American Bird Conservancy. The large number of spotted owls being put at risk by this project and the amount of habitat being taken over from owl reserves is an unreasonable risk to the population and should not have been approved. The project was as a 187,000-acre area in Northern California affected by wildfires in 2014, is inconsistent with government research indicating the owls will often continue nesting in burned forests. They also frequently forage in these areas due to the abundant prey after the fire. The Northern Spotted Owls Recovery Plan calls for conserving large standing dead trees used by the owls for nesting. These large snags take a long time to form in the landscape and are currently in short supply, said Steve Holmer, ABC CBC's senior policy advisor. If the Woodside plan proceeds, this essential owl habitat will be lost. According to the Forest Service, the Woodside timber sales are intended to protect public safety, reduce hazardous fuels, and provide for economic use of burned timber. The sales include 5,570 acres of salvage harvest, 12,700 acres of tree planting, 320 miles of roadside hazard abatement, 24,500 acres of hazardous fuel rejection, including 11,180 acres of prescribed burns. We at American Bird Conservancy urge the Forest Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to reconsider the salvage portion of the Woodside decision, said Fenwick. We ask them to adopt a more conservative approach to managing northern spotted owl critical habitat and to ensure that similar projects putting in so many of threatened owls at risk are not approved in the future. A better post-fire management strategy has already been suggested by the Karuk tribe, Fenwick continued. That strategy focuses on protecting human safety by removing hazard trees along roads and targeting fire risk reduction activities around nearby communities. The northern spotted owl population is in steep decline, according to the latest population study released last year by the Forest Service. The research indicates that since monitoring began in 1985, spotted owl populations have declined 55-77% in Washington, 31-68% in Oregon, and 32-55% in California. In addition, population declines are now occurring in study areas in southern Oregon and northern California that were previously experiencing little to no detectable decline throughout 2009. The American Bird Conservancy is the Western Hemisphere's bird conservation specialist, the only organization with a single and steadfast commitment to achieving conservation results for native birds and their habitats throughout the Americas. With a focus on efficiency and working in partnership, we take on the toughest problems facing birds today, innovating and building on sound science to halt extinctions, protect habitats, eliminate threats, and build capacity for bird conservation. You can check their website out at www.abcbirds.org. That's abcbirds.org. And C. Shepherd applauds Spanish authorities on arrest following raids on Vidal Armadores. From the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society of Australia, Sea Shepherd Captains Paul Hammerstadt and Siddharthi Chakravarta have congratulated Spanish authorities on the arrest of six people following raids on the headquarters of known fishing crime syndicate Vidal Armadores. Reports indicate that the six arrested, including company owner Antonio Vidal Suarez, are accused of illegally fishing for Antarctic and Patagonian toothfish. Vidal Armadores is the most notorious of a handful of Spanish-based fishing outfits that are believed to have controlling interests in the illegal trade of venerable toothfish. In 2002, the family-owned company made international headlines when Australian authorities famously pursued the Vidal-owned vessel Virarsa 1 off subantarctic Heard Island for suspected toothfish poaching. That same year, United States officials seized an illegal shipment of Vidal Armadores toothfish. Many of the company's ships had ended up on international blacklists, including the Kunlun, Yongding, and Sunghua, three of the Bandit 6 toothfish poaching vessels that had been the focus of Sea Shepherd's last two Southern Ocean Defense campaigns, Operation Icefish and Operation Icefish 2015-16. In February of 2015, and during Operation Icefish, Captain Chakravarti and the crew of the Sea Shepherd ship San Simon intercepted the Yongding and the Kunlun in Australian Antarctic waters. Captain Chakravarti then pursued the Kunlun out of its hunting grounds in the Southern Ocean. International attention on the Kunlun and the issue of toothfish poaching ensued, and the vessel was prevented from returning to its poaching operations in the Southern Ocean before it was arrested in Senegal last month. Then in May of 2015, the Sunghua and Yongding were apprehended in Cabo Verde, West Africa, thanks to intelligence provided to international law enforcement by Captain Hammerstead. For over a decade, the owners behind the Bandit 6 have remained hidden behind a shroud of mystery. Sea Shepherd's actions in the oceans to shut down their fishing operations have been hugely successful. With the ships out of commission, land-based investigations and raids by various authorities in Spain are now taking the enforcement to the source of the illegal trade, said Captain Chakravarti. Sea Shepherd has also highlighted the importance of continued international cooperation in battle against illegal fishing. These recent arrests are evidence of a crucial role of Interpol's Fisheries Crime Unit and international cooperation in the fight against illegal fishing, said Captain Hammerstedt. Global collaboration is essential to combat this crime, which is also global, both in its nature and its impact, he concluded. For further information, visit www.seashepherd.org.au. That's www.seashepherd.org.au. And turning to news from the Center for Biological Diversity, the standoff in Oregon is the latest result of anti-public lands movement. The armed men who took over a federal building in southeastern Oregon are part of a long-running campaign of violence, intimidation, and extremist paranoia that has festered for decades in the West over the issuance of public lands, the previous standoff in 2014 by Clive and Bundy in Nevada. Among the demands in the last standoff were to shut down Oregon's Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, which provides critical protection for wildlife, especially birds that migrate through the area. This is the latest in a long string of armed right-wing thugs attempting to seize America's public lands to enact paranoid anti-government dreams brought about by guns and intimidation, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Kieran Suckling. What's happened in Oregon is the logical outgrowth of right-wing rhetoric that demonizes even the concept of federal lands, places like national parks and forests, and villainizes those who believe that publicly owned land should be more than a source of profit for ranchers and corporations. And a lawsuit has been launched to protect monarch butterflies. If we're ever going to save one of America's most beloved and charismatic butterflies, action is needed. That's why the Center for Biological Diversity and the Center for Food Safety have launched a legal action over the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service failure to protect monarch butterflies under the Endangered Species Act. We petitioned the agency for federal protections in August of 2014 following the decline of the butterfly's population over the past two decades of more than 80%. The service gave an initial positive decision to our petition a few months later, but is now more than a year in taking the next step to determine whether butterflies will be protected. We have filed notice of our intent to sue over the delay. The threats to the monarch are so large in scale that the butterfly needs the effective protection of the Endangered Species Act if we're really serious about saving this amazing migrating wonder for future generations, said the center's Tiara Curry. And you can find more information at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear our rebroadcast at 3 p.m. on Fridays as part of our Environment Friday programming. You can also listen in to KRFP Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, 90.3 FM at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays, Truth and Justice Radio WZBC Boston, Massachusetts at 90.3 FM carries the Earth First Update from 6 to 10 a.m. on Sundays. You can also listen in to Grateful Dread Public Radio, an internet radio station, Sundays at 2 a.m. Go to gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. Or you could go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous Earth First Updates. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It's free to download. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and www.freakradio.org. Tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.